Hi, everyone. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, coming to you from Newsstand Studios at Rockefeller Center in New York City. Each week, we feature interviews with the coolest culinary personalities around. I am so excited because one of our favorite guests is back. It's Nigella Lawson, the brilliant writer behind so many great cookbooks, including the modern classics How to Eat and How to Be a Domestic Goddess. Last year, during the pandemic, Nigella's latest book was published, Cook, Eat, Repeat, and it is classic Nigella. There's lots to read, lots to cook and bake, and fun chapters dedicated to bold ingredients like anchovies and rhubarb. Those are separate chapters, of course. And guess what? Nigella is headed to North America soon for her Cook, Eat, Repeat book tour, and it kicks off November 7th in Boston and includes lots of stops in places like Minneapolis, Toronto, and Austin. There's even a special stop in Brooklyn on November 9th featuring Nigella and Ina Garten in conversation. Tickets are on sale now for all dates. You can check out our show description for the ticket link and to see where else Nigella is going. Also, we'll be giving away a pair of tickets to Ina and Nigella's talk in Brooklyn, so keep an eye on our Instagram feed at Cherry Bomb. Later in the show, we'll hear from two of our favorite bakers, Caroline Schiff and Cheryl Day, so stay tuned for that too. Some housekeeping. We're getting ready to announce the schedule and lineup for our Cherry Bomb Cooks and Books Festival, taking place November 5th and 6th at the Ace Hotel in Brooklyn. It's a fun weekend-long celebration of cookbooks and the folks who write them. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter at cherrybomb.com and be the first to know about the lineup. You'll also get early access to ticket sales. Now, let's check in with our first guest. Hi, Nigella.
Hi, Carrie. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well.
Have you eaten enough tomatoes yet?
There are never enough tomatoes. Well, we're very excited you're coming to America. I bought tickets the second they went on sale for King's Theater.
Oh, thank you.
So, Nigella, you're coming to the U.S. What foods do you look forward to eating when you come to America?
Oh, it so depends. I suppose what I really think, one of the things that Americans are brilliant at, and you're good at lots of things, is fantastic lettuces and salads. And I don't mean necessarily, I'm not saying this because I'm looking for anything lean to eat, but because I think good lettuce gets rarer and rarer to find, because it's all, a lot of it seems to be all the sort of uniform leaves. So a really good salad, preferably one with anchovies in the dressing.
You love your anchovies.
I do, but I love that. And that's something I always love. I think as well, I love going to the places. It so depends. Each city has a focus on slightly different ways of cooking and attracts different bands of nationalities. I feel actually at a slight disadvantage because I haven't really been in America properly for so long. But one of the things I'm very much hoping is I'll get very good recommendations.
Well, you are very popular on Twitter. I know anytime you mention us on Twitter, it explodes and I get worried. I'm like, oh my God, why are there 100 tweets? And it's you inevitably.
So I suppose what I think is with America is that I think that there's always something, there's always such choice because you can, you know, if you feel like a kind of hole in the wall place where the food's going to blow you away, there's that. If you want old school Americana, and I mean more not in terms of the cooking exactly, but that classic American elegance with a beautiful dining room and all the dishes you would imagine will be there. You're not going to be taken by surprise, but you'll have a wonderful time. And above all, I mean, I think it's a difficult thing to say now, but I think an American steakhouse always is a lure for me because you're so good at that.
Well, you're coming at a great time. I mean, it's the number of new restaurants and young chefs doing pop-ups and really exciting things. I just don't ever remember a moment like this.
Well, I'm really encouraged by that because it must have been so difficult during 2020 and 2021. And also, of course, the great bakeries.
New York alone, just wait till you're here.
I know, and that's often easier for me because you do events at night, so you can't often go out for dinner.
We'll put a list together for you of all the new bakeries, but I do know The second you crowdsource your Twitter audience, you will crash the internet. I know that much.
Well, I won't do it on, because it's difficult. I've got to work out what I can do. But there's also just the joy of wandering about a city, seeing what's going on, being drawn to something unfamiliar or correspondingly, you know, that if you get very tired on tour, often you want, it's you either want that sudden energizing bolt of surprise, or you want something that's very familiar and makes you feel looked after. And, you know, one of those places sometimes when they've been doing the same food for 20, 30 years and it's still pitch perfect, but you're not maybe going to have a surprise, but you're going to be taken care of. And that's the thing, is that food, whether it's the food we're cooking ourselves at home or the food you go out for, it's so allied to mood that it's quite hard to know ahead what you're ever going to be in the mood to eat. But what I find is when I'm on tour is that I don't eat as many vegetables as I do at home. So going to restaurants that have a great salad to start with. And then, I mean, last time I was in New York, I so fell in love with this salad. And I wish I could remember where the place was. I wrote about it, so I might have to let you know after. The salad was so great. I ordered one to start with. And then at the end, I had to order another one. I don't eat burgers that much in the UK. I don't get a hankering for it. But, you know, God, you can get a very good burger in America. And I like the ones which the young people don't. I wasn't brought up in burgers, so I like it when they're really thick and have got fantastic meat in them. I don't like the little slim, little skinny discs.
Well, big thing now is the smash burger. Has that come to the UK yet?
No, I've read about it, but I'm very much looking forward to it. There is a bit here, Nick Jones, who does the Soho House and all those houses here, he has something called a dirty burger, which is not dissimilar, I think.
Okay. Nigella, tell me about this tour. Why are you doing a tour now? And are there any cities that you're hitting that are brand new that you're really looking forward to?
Well, I am looking forward to all of them, but I didn't do a tour when my book came out last year because it wasn't possible. The lawyers wouldn't allow it, the publisher said. So now that a tour is possible, it's wonderful because there's something so great about, I mean, I miss the States a lot. But there's something also great about talking about things that you love. And I love talking about food. And then because this tour involves always audience questions, always, I love that because I quite like not knowing what I'm going to be asked. But also it becomes a conversation.
Do you solicit the questions beforehand or do people ask them live?
It'll be up to each theatre how they do it. But generally speaking, to the best of my knowledge, they'll just be whatever protocols are in play.
Got it.
They'll ask questions just as they want to. And it's not me who will choose them, but the interviewer.
And you're kicking things off in a big way with Ina Garten here in Brooklyn, my backyard. I do have tickets to this one, so I do want to know a little bit. How did you and Ina pair up for this?
We did an interview together when everything was locked down and we just did it a Zoom one and we got on very well. I mean, we've spoken before and I once did a guest appearance again, but a remote guest appearance I filmed in London for one of her Thanksgiving shows. I mean, it's not surprising we get on because we essentially come from the same place food-wise.
Have you two never met in person?
I think once a long time ago, but not really. So I am very, very, very excited. I think we're going to have a gas. I mean, I really think we're just going to be gabbling excitedly. I hope, you know, we're not all going to be turfed out on the dot because I feel like, you know, we could be talking for ages and of course there'll be questions and a lot of questions will provoke further discussion because we'll agree or disagree. But what I rather love anyway is conversations can't be contained too much. And I think conversations are good because you can really discuss, you can go back to the person who's asked the question. Other people sometimes, if they're relaxed enough, can weigh in. And for me, in a way, just like cooking, you need it to have structure, but it has to have a slightly anarchic quality too when it's also a live thing happening. You're cooking in the moment. You suddenly change your mind and you want to add something else. You knock the thing, you chop a vegetable to go in, I'm clumsy, you knock it on the floor, you have to think again. And you're always reacting spontaneously. And I think I've said it before, you need a structure and a framework, but you need the freedom to be spontaneous. And exactly the same is true with these events. I feel I don't go with anything in particular to say, except talk about the food I love and what I think cooking is all about. But from every thought could be developed a different way. So a lot depends on the questions I'm asked, and a lot depends on what I might have eaten that day, the interests of the general interests of the audience as a whole. And I'm very pleased to be steered by that. I think as much as possible, and this is the thing that, you know, it can be missing in events that aren't live. It's wonderful to be able to do things when you can't go over to a place physically. But one of the things that's so great is that intimacy of a room. And I think that's particularly true sometimes when an event's not being filmed, because everyone is just in there and you're talking frankly and you're talking just from the heart. And it's so extraordinary how each talk, just because of the nature of the person I'm talking with, and of course, the audience, that both have an equal influence, and it can go any number of ways. And I think that's what makes it a proper, authentic sharing and coming together. And I suppose that that's so lovely for me to be able to do that again.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Cook, Eat, Repeat, the book you're coming here to celebrate. Mm-hmm. The last time you and I spoke about the book, it was rhubarb season, and you have that brilliant chapter dedicated to rhubarb. Now it's fall here in the U.S., I flagged a recipe that I want to make, your chicken in a pot with lemon orzo, because who doesn't love all those ingredients?
It's so cozy, only one pot to wash up, and it does a kind of miracle of allowing you to feed lots more people than you would think you would normally with the chicken.
Your description alone, the head note, sold me on it. But I have a question for you. I have never cooked with dried herbs, and it calls for dried herbs. And it just made me think, have I been missing out on this entire world of delight?
I think dried herbs are better than they used to be as well, because they're dried faster often. It depends. You know, they're different qualities. I'm very interested in the pairing of a dried herb with its fresh sister. So, for example, one of my favorite pairings is dried mint with fresh mint. Now, we know fresh mint, very underused, I think, in certain cuisines, not all. Fresh mint brings you freshness. It brings you something that's it's invigorating. And dried mint, on the contrary, takes on a sweet, deep, sometimes almost peppery flavor. And so they really complement one another well. I think winter in England, which is what I wrote this recipe for, actually, you know, sometimes the thyme you might get wouldn't be so great. But dry thyme is a really excellent herb. Again, there is something about thyme that I love thyme. So when I absolute favorite of fresh herbs to have, and I try and grow it in whatever small space I have, and there's something so wonderfully aromatic about it, in a way that it's like walking through a forest. It has that sort of boskiness. It's like walking through a forest, and yet there's a slight lemoniness as well. It delivers on quite a complex bouquet, I think, on several layers. Now, dried thyme doesn't have so many notes in it, but again, like the dried mint, it's almost smoky, and you notice more of that tipping towards aniseed. It's not quite aniseed, but it's going towards that. And I think that works so well. I think with dried herbs, you're always better off on a dish that's cooked for quite a long time.
So stews, soups, those things.
Yes, stews an awful lot, but you know, it's quite interesting that if they're good dried herbs, it does all bring just a little bit more complexity. I think fresh herbs are often much better for the higher notes, or perhaps I think of as more tip of the tongue than the flavoring that somehow just is like a cloud that seems to expand as you eat it. But they do work very well together. But, you know, an Italian food writer, Anna Del Conte, once said to me that if she's using dried mushrooms, she will, like dried porcini, she says, and then you can use, even if you use those little button mushrooms with it, it's as if those button mushrooms respond to the call of the wild and something in them that's had all the mushroom flavor knocked out of them. Suddenly they find that again, and that somehow you get more flavor out of them. And I think there's something about using dried herbs and fresh herbs in combination that allows something a bit different to happen, that you're ramping up the flavor. I think it's more nuanced than if you just double the amount of dried or double the amount of fresh. And I think that's the interesting thing with cooking, because what you want to get is you want to produce a chord, not just a note. But it depends, and some are better than others. But I have noticed recently that I think they freeze dry them and they seem to be less dusty and desiccated.
Dusty and desiccated is what I think of my mom's herb collection from the 80s.
If I remember the dried herbs at home, you know, they would have been you'd be using one in 1982 and it would be safe, you know, used by right. 1971.
Exactly. Okay.
I think no one ever threw them away. They got those things when they got married. They got a wedding present of that little herb and spice.
I'm going to take a picture of my mother's spice cabinet because there are some relics.
And then they never changed ever again.
No.
So you'd be lucky, someone might be 30 years old or more.
You always give us great cultural recommendations. Is there anything you're reading or streaming right now that you can recommend?
I'm very behind on streaming. Like a lot of people, the summer reading I adored, although I read it before, was the Bonnie Garmus Lessons in Chemistry. Have you read that?
I just bought a copy of it. It sounds fantastic.
Oh, no, it is wonderful. It is really wonderful. It's one of those books that says serious things, but is really one of those rollicking good reads.
Oh, fantastic.
And I think the same is true. Jill Hornby, and that's Jill with a G, has written a book called Something Hall, Hodmerton Hall or something. It's probably going to be sold as spoof Jane Austen. It's not really spoof Jane Austen, although it's certainly written in that vein, and Jane Austen features as a character. But it's written very much from the perspective of a 21st century feminist, really talking about the place of women. And of course, then, you know, it was marriage, or you had to be supported by a richer family member, or a life of an underpaid governess. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderfully peopled book, very much in the Jane Austen style, where you're in a beautiful house and the family, and it's witty. I think it merges contemporary attitudes with real researched fact brilliantly, and I really warmly recommend that. But also, I read an awful lot in ebooks, and when you read an ebook, unlike when you read a proper book, as it were, you don't see the title all the time.
Right. Oh, I'm surprised you read ebooks. I would think, well, I know you love books. I know you love printed things.
Well, I do love books, but partly because my house is a health hazard anyway, because, you know, as you walk in the door, you do a Bambi fall over. There are so many books on the floor, every table piled up.
I forgot, you've already got thousands of books, right?
And also, it means I can read at night, and when I travel, I can take them with me. But I got both of that book, because I had to buy the hard copy afterwards because I knew I wanted to read it again.
Did you read Black Cake by Charmaine Wilkerson?
Yes, I did. I thought that was wonderful.
I just picked that up, so I need to read
yes.
that next.
And I'm a lover of black cake, too.
I know. I'm excited because I'm going to make one this season. Yeah. I had my first attempt at a fruitcake last year, and I'm going to delve deeper into that world this winter. Well, Nigella, thank you so much for your time. It's always fun talking
to
you.
It's so lovely to talk to you. Sorry I ramble on like as I do, but you seduce me into rambling on, so I must partly blame you.
Well, I'll take the blame. We could listen to you ramble all day. Isn't Nigella the best? I could talk to her forever. Next up, we have a special recording from our Jubilee 2023 conference, which took place in April at Center 415 in Manhattan. Jubilee is our annual conference, and it's become the largest gathering of women in the food and drink space in the whole U.S. We're about to hear from Caroline Schiff, the celebrated pastry chef from Gage and Tolner Restaurant in Brooklyn. Caroline has become famous here in New York City for her baked Alaska, which is considered one of the city's must-have desserts. I can also vouch for it. I've had it several times, and it is amazing. Caroline will introduce Cheryl Day, the beloved baker behind Savannah's Back in the Day Bakery and author of the book Cheryl Day's Treasury of Southern Baking. Cheryl moved several folks in the audience to tears, including myself. So get ready. I hope you enjoy her words as much as I did. Let's welcome Caroline to the stage.
Wow. Hi, everybody. My name is Caroline Schiff, and I am so beyond excited to be here at Jubilee in person, and it is so wonderful to see the whole bomb squad here. This is incredible. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm the executive pastry chef at Gage and Tolner in Brooklyn. Some of you might know me for my baked Alaskas, which have kind of become the signature dessert at Gage and Tolner. And I am also the author of the cookbook, The Sweet Side of Sourdough. I'm really thrilled to be here today to introduce the incredible, iconic Cheryl Day. I was so excited when Carrie asked me to introduce her. Cheryl is joining us all the way from Savannah, where she is the co-founder of Back in the Day Bakery, a much-loved local establishment, and it is on my bucket list. I've already told Cheryl I'm coming to visit her. She is also the founder of Janie Q Provisions, a small batch seasonal preserves line named for her mom. I love so much. Cheryl is a self-taught scratch baker and a James Beard Award semifinalist for Outstanding Pastry Chef. She is also the co-founder of Southern Restaurants for Racial Justice and a founding member of the leadership committee for the James Beard Foundation Investment Fund for Black and Indigenous Americans. Cheryl's first solo cookbook, Cheryl Day's Treasury of Southern Baking, was released last year, and Cheryl is a treasure herself. So I am so honored to welcome her to the stage. Everybody, Cheryl Day.
It's so great to see everybody, I have to say. So I'm just going to tell you a little story about myself. Legend has it that my very first sentence was, "Are you having a good time?" As I grew up, I became the girl who could always entertain a crowd with good food and conversation. Every weekend, my childhood home in Los Angeles became House Party Central. Folks often showed up on Friday and spent the entire weekend gathering at our house. These parties often lasted all weekend long because of my dad's famous poolside barbecues. My mom, Janie Queen, was a tall, regal Black woman. She wore brightly colored caftans and natural hair long before it was fashionable. She made sure our guests always had a cold drink in their hands and felt welcomed in our home. And my sister and I, we learned to do the same at a very young age. My mom gets all the credit for teaching me the soul of Southern hospitality and the true joy of living life to the fullest every single day. You see, I come from a long line of women who dared to follow their dreams. I am the descendant of Hannah Queen Rubs, who was born enslaved in this country in 1838. And she lived to be over 100 years old. She opened the door for all the queens in my family. And dare I say, she's opened the door for a lot of you as well. As a young girl, my mom taught me so many life lessons and what I now refer to as Janie Q-isms. She was my guiding light. She'd say, Cheryl, stand up straight. Pull your shoulders back and walk tall when you enter the room. Arrive earlier and stay later than everybody else. Work harder and do more than's expected. And perhaps my absolute favorite, this or something better. Meaning, there are no mistakes and no one can ever take your good from you. I always believed it was her gentle way of preparing me to be resilient to the obstacles that she knew I would face. She knew that I had to work twice as hard for half as much. Those Janie Q-isms also taught me how to embrace all the good that would come in my life. Sadly, she passed away when I was just 22 years old. And as you can imagine, I was devastated. That was the most difficult time in my life. I just wanted to know what my life would look like without my mother to light my path along the way. I had to make some really serious choices at a time when, honestly, I just wanted to feel sorry for myself and pull the covers over my head. But as it turns out, I'm not built to fail. Life has a funny way of presenting you with obstacles and options that will take you through many twists and turns that absolutely make no sense at the time, but somehow lead you exactly where you should be. I left college and I could have fallen hard, but instead I chose to rise. I made the choice to continue to dream of the beautiful life my mother worked so hard for me to enjoy. By day, I worked as a receptionist at an architect's office. I found out I really enjoyed working with creative folks. And although my position as a receptionist was far from creative, I found a way to make it fun. Every day at lunch, I would go to the library and do research. To be honest, I had no real plan of action. Some days I would check out books about how to open up a business, but I couldn't decide what kind of business. So the next day I would check out inspiring books about entrepreneurs or self-help books, even poetry to keep me motivated. But on most days, I would spend my lunch hour reading cookbooks. On the weekends, I would bake or make jam. And on Monday, I loaded up my weekend treats to share with my coworkers at the office. I really had no clue what I wanted to do. So I just kept living and learning. I knew I wanted to do something that would leave my mark on this world. Something that would have made my mother proud of what I had become. I'm a deep thinker, and during this time, I started to really wonder what my true calling was. So on a whim, I went to a psychic. I asked her that pressing question. Will I ever find my soulmate? She held my hand and said, well, that's going to be a long while. And it was, but I did. But she said, you are going to write books. I said, oh, okay, well, I like books and I enjoy writing, so maybe that's my calling. And I remember questioning her what kind of books. I just got really excited. She said I was going to write many, many popular books. And as if she had all the answers, she said, maybe like Irma Bombeck. Now, I realize I'm dating myself now, but some of you may have to Google her. I remember thinking, this reading is bullshit. I was like, I spent a lot of time at the library, and I never see anyone that looks like me on the cover of any of these books. But I continued writing in my journal, and I kept a notebook anyway, which would come in handy much, much later. Listen, there have been many, many times in my life where folks have tried to push me down. Times when I felt I was not given the same opportunities as others just because of the color of my skin. I never let it stop me, though, from dreaming a bigger dream for myself, for brown and black girls, and for all girls. So that random research did pay off. I opened Back in the Day Bakery 20 years ago with my husband. As it turns out, it brought a great deal of pride in a neighborhood that really needed some love. I told myself, someday, I'm going to spread this love and make it easier for all the young black and brown girls that would come after me. That time is now, because I'm here. So when I set out to write Cheryl Day's Treasury of Southern Baking, which I can't believe they put my name on the book either, I decided that it was time to shine the light on the black women who created Southern baking. And I also gave myself permission to shine a light on myself. I have never felt more seen than when I wrote this book, because I put my legacy on every single page. I am grateful to stand on the shoulders of my ancestors who came before me. And I'm determined to open the door wider to create more space on the bookshelves for women of color so that we will continue to rise.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much to Nigella Lawson for joining me today. Tickets are on sale right now for her North American Cook, Eat, Repeat cookbook tour. Check out our show notes for the ticket link. I have tickets for the Brooklyn Stop with Ina. I am so excited, and maybe I'll see some of you there. And thank you to Cheryl Day and Caroline Schiff for their beautiful words at Jubilee this year. You can find their cookbooks at your favorite cookbook store and taste what they're baking up IRL at Gage and Tolner Restaurant in Brooklyn and Back in the Day Bakery in Savannah. If you'd like to join us for Jubilee 2023, early bird tickets are on sale right now at cherrybomb.com. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Magazine. Our theme song is by the band Cha La La. Thank you, Joseph Hazen, studio engineer for Newsstand Studios at Rockefeller Center. And thank you to our assistant producer, Jenna Sadu. And thanks to you for listening. You're the bomb.